Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Welcome to Dr. Levine's Medical Hour on News Talk 560 KLVI. Dr. Levine is a doctor of internal medicine and is ready to take your calls at 896-KLVI or 800-330-KLVI. You can listen to Dr. Levine's Medical Hour on the air, online at KLVI.com, or on your phone with the free iHeartRadio app. Now, here's Dr. Levine.
Good morning, Southeast Texas Internet Radio listeners. Welcome to another edition of the Dr. Levine Medical Hour. I'm your host, Dr. Levine, coming to you live from the studios here in Beaumont, Texas, KLVI. Taking your phone calls about healthcare and medicine, as I see it, try to make things a little bit simpler for you. Sometimes not always possible, but we'll try our best to get to the bottom and get some clarity in whatever confusion you might have. Phone lines are open, 896-KLVI, 1-800-330-KLVI. Happy holiday. We're heading into our holiday festivities, and everyone tends to get excited about this time. We're seeing the Christmas decorations go up, and the Christmas commercials are already starting, and houses are lit, so everyone's getting excited about this holiday season. And obviously, because we've been in a pandemic past couple of years, talking with patients, it seems that because we do have vaccines and it seems like things are kind of quiet, most people will be gathering probably the last year and the one before that. A lot of people were hesitant about gathering and just really didn't know what to do, and were concerned. And it seems that there's a higher comfort level now with going and visiting with your family and having people over. So it seems like more people are open to getting together. And I can certainly understand that. It's been an exhausting 1 to 2 years of dealing with this pandemic. And everybody's just kind of looking for some reprieve and to get on with things. And it seems that with the vaccines the way they are and the boosters, and that now most people, almost everyone's eligible unless you have side effect issues, and those can be many side effects. We talked about that before on this show. If you have some sort of restrictions, which there are not that many restrictions, just about everyone is eligible and can get these vaccines, unless you maybe had allergic reactions to previous vaccines, or you took your first out of a two-part series and you became really ill. Then I think we look at that as maybe you're high risk and maybe you shouldn't get the second one. But, you know, talk to your healthcare professional, primary care physician, whomever you go to for your medical advice, and have a conversation with them about what you think the best option is for you. But we haven't seen a lot of upper respiratory infections in my office, as well as a hospital. We normally see a large increase during the winter months, and obviously I think it has a lot to do with the fact that A lot of people are still wearing masks. A lot of public places still want you to wear masks in the public facility, not all. I mean, things like restaurants and concerts and things like that, I think they've become a bit more relaxed. But in my office, the hospital and certain other medical institutions, people are still wearing masks. So that obviously cuts down on viral transmission, as you can tell. When all this started, there were just all these reports and studies out about how perfect it was or imperfect it was. But the idea is that it does reduce the transmission, just because it's sort of a barrier. Some barriers are better than others. But it's just a barrier that you can provide that can kind of cut down virus particles being transmitted in the air and then someone inhaling them, which is how these viruses sort of get around, respiratory droplets or viral droplets sort of suspended in the air. And then you obviously have sort of contact spread, which seems to be less likely. A lot of my colleagues and talking with the nursing staff, et cetera, it's only been a year and a half, but we sort of go back to when things first started and we were sort of gowning up from head to toe, and we were washing clothes every day at the house and just disrobing just because we didn't want the virus particles that we thought were in our clothes to get in our house. And you went all the way, getting your groceries, getting takeout. You didn't want the virus on your packaging. And we just thought this virus was everywhere. And a lot of people, made changes appropriately, but we have somewhat found out that it's mainly sort of in the air, and mask wearing seems to help. So it seems more, a lot of people have gotten comfortable with wearing the masks, and they, whether or not they plan on wearing them when they visit with their family, probably not. But obviously, it helps decrease the transmission. And people have sort of gotten used to it. But it's good that a lot of folks are excited about the holiday, just kind of getting back to going where they want to go. And with all these sort of vaccine mandates that are coming out, even here locally at the hospitals, you have to show the fact that you did get your vaccines or you'll suffer certain consequences, sort of can't come to the facility or you can't work. So it's gotten to that point, and a lot of experts agree with that. And I think that that's the right direction to go. Vaccines have always made a huge difference in our ability to control these sort of infections. So I think that's a win-win. One thing that did happen during the pandemic is, especially that first year, we sort of slowed down on healthcare screening, and that's a big thing that I do in primary care is healthcare screening. And because we just really didn't know a lot about the pandemic and how far it was going to go, everyone sort of did what they could to limit patient interaction. And that was one thing that I participated in for several months, sort of just not knowing how bad this was going to get. Primary care doctors or your healthcare professionals who serve as your primary care, sort of their job, their priority to make sure you're up to date with your screening examinations. And I certainly slowed down with that, and patients in general, again, not knowing what was going on, didn't really want to get out and go to a healthcare setting if they could avoid it. Just because we just didn't know. And so a lot of folks sort of slowed down their cancer screening, and certainly it has.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Created some delays with patients getting diagnosed appropriately. We do screen for certain cancers, not all cancers, but certain cancers. But, you know, a year can certainly make a huge difference with getting diagnosed sooner rather than later. And that's sort of the whole idea about cancer screening, is we want to catch it as soon as possible so that we can do something about it. And so that's one thing that we've sort of had to catch up with this year, is to make sure that everyone is getting their screening test. And I think most people are familiar with breast cancer screening, which, you know, has come a long, long way. And the recommendations haven't really changed too much in terms of when to start. There is a little bit of different recommendations depending on the societies that you look at. Some recommend sooner, some recommend later. For me, it's about the age of 40 that I start recommending breast cancer screening to ladies. However, if there's a strong family history of breast cancer in the family, they do have some genetic predispositions that are well recognized, then we do typically recommend that they get those 5 to 10 years sooner to find those a lot earlier, and also to sometimes get genetic counseling, again, in those families that seem to demonstrate a strong family history of cancer. And that's why a lot of times we will ask what your family history is, just to get an idea of what sort of things we should be prioritizing. And certainly if something is, there's cancer that seems to be in your first, we call that first degree relatives. And, you know, that would be mother, father, sister, brother, versus maybe a secondary relative or tertiary, which might be an auntie, grandmother, et cetera. You're sort of removed genetically some distance. So that's how we look at that. So if your mother and father are having medical problems, then, you know, you share a lot more information with that person. And depending on what they're going through, you're more likely to have those same sicknesses and illnesses, not necessarily, but, you know, the chances are a lot higher. So it's something to prioritize. And, you know, that's something obviously you should know as a person, just, you know, what are the sort of things that run in your family. But breast cancer screening normally at the age of 40, we do recommend to ladies, you know, to start sort of examining themselves on a regular basis, just because, you know, the mammogram, the technology has certainly allowed them to detect cancers at a much earlier stage and can see very small cancers using the technology. But a lot can happen within a year's time. And so a lot of times we will invite patients to examine themselves sort of monthly in case something happens within that year's time. A lot of times patients or women will find their own breast cancers because they feel something that's unusual or odd. Maybe it's tender, maybe it's never been there before, and they sort of get the sense that it's something that's getting larger or getting bigger, or it's just different than before. And that's really the whole idea with these sort of self breast examinations, is, you know, technically your cancer could start on the next day that you had your mammogram, and you go a whole year without any sort of screening, which is why we sort of incorporate that. There is a little bit of disagreement with that, but I still recommend that. It's something that over the years I've found that is helpful to ladies, and again, brings awareness to the fact that it's something that you need to be screening about and prioritizing. So, you know, I do recommend ladies do that. So, again, mammograms, typically very easy to set up. For some ladies, it can cause some discomfort just because of the way they do it. They sort of have to kind of mash the, or flatten, I guess is a better term, the breast tissue so that they can get a good x-ray. And sometimes that can be quite painful for some ladies. But certainly, you know, if you are a female and you are listening and you are due for your cancer screening, you know, please go out and get that and get that scheduled as we're trying to finish up the year with our screenings. So, you know, breast cancer is one of those more recognizable sort of screening exams We also have colon cancer screening, which has gotten more and more complicated and more multi-layered. It used to be pretty straightforward. But just as more medical research comes out, and again, we're trying to hit those high points in terms of getting people screened, it's gotten a little bit more complicated, but a little bit easier as well, as the traditional colonoscopy used to sort of be kind of the gold standard way to screen for colon cancer, which the new latest recommendation was to start at the age of 45 versus 50. We used to start at the age of 50. Now it's the age of 45 because of crunching numbers and looking at the research, it was discovered that we were finding a lot of young people were getting diagnosed with colon cancer. And so we sort of moved up the age to 45 instead of 50 as a result of that. And there's been a lot of noncompliance with colonoscopies. Again, I've mentioned that, and if you do have insurance, the insurance companies are sort of tracking what you're doing, what we're doing, kind of as a surveillance program to make sure a lot of these basic things are being done, and not necessarily that they're trying to get anybody in trouble, but just trying to help out where they can to increase the chances that people are getting their exams when they're due. And some insurance companies, and you may have already experienced this, are sending out other healthcare professionals, typically nurse practitioners, to come and talk with you, sit down at a more relaxed pace and sort of go over everything and make sure you're up to date. But colonoscopies were sort of those procedures that most people did not look forward to. It's very uncomfortable. They just didn't want to hear the fact that now they're due, they're older, and now they have to go get that examination almost. A lot of people have same issues with going to the dentist, you know, being in your mouth, and sometimes it's painful, and they just, you know, uncomfortable with that. And colonoscopies were very, very similar to that. But we now have different examinations, these stool kits, and you've probably seen some commercials on TV where a little kit comes to your house and you basically, you know, provide your own sample and process it yourself. Very convenient, very easy. You can do it anytime. And you send it off to the lab and you get some results within a couple of weeks. And, you know, extremely, extremely convenient. So that has increased the opportunity for anyone to get screened for colon cancer, whereas before you had to kind of take off from work and the previous night you had to drink this solution to kind of get cleaned out. And colonoscopies, sometimes there's a few risks involved. And so it's a bigger production in terms of just getting screening done. And that's what we've realized with screening in general, is that you have to sort of make this thing as easy as possible, as convenient as possible, if you want to increase the chances of most people getting properly screened. It's sort of the same thing we found out with vaccines when it first came out. We weren't hitting our marks in terms of getting people vaccinated. And experts know that in order to get a high percentage of people vaccinated, you have to make this thing as easy as possible, as convenient as possible, just because there's just so many barriers that are placed in front of a person and getting whatever test we want. There's a lot of barriers, and so we have to sort of break those barriers down and get the product or the vaccine or the test to the patient as easy and as straightforward as possible from A to B. And so that's what these stool kits offer. And the most popular one right now is called Cologuard. And you're only a candidate for this Cologuard if you have no strong family history of colon cancer and there's absolutely nothing going on in your medical history in terms of colon cancer or colon diseases. If you have any sort of colon cancer history in your family, or you had it, or you had polyps, or you have any sort of chronic GI disease, then you're not really a candidate for that. You just need to go and get the traditional colonoscopy. But most people, like I said, don't have any of that. Most people don't have a history of colon cancer. They have no active chronic gastrointestinal illnesses. So these stool kits are highly convenient and one of those things that we would recommend for you to get. You just have to talk with the healthcare professional. There's videos on how to process it and what to do. So you know, it's really allowed patients to get tested and screened a lot easier than before. And I find that when I offer that to them, patients are kind of excited, realizing that they don't have to undergo the colonoscopy. They can just do this kit. So it has allowed us to catch patients with cancer at a much earlier age than if they would have kept sort of putting off the colonoscopy just because of inconvenience, or they can't get off from work, or nobody can drive them. These are the things that you had to do when you're talking about a previous colonoscopy. And the colonoscopies are still heavily used. Just for most people, they can just go through their screening and kind of be done when it's negative. And we do that Cologuard every 3 years. There is the stool cards where they kind of sort of check for blood, fecal occult stool cards. Some practitioners still do that. That's once a year. I'm not a big fan of that. Just a lot of interference and a lot of false positive results with that particular test. I don't really do that test. This Cologuard is sort of more of a genetic-based test, which is more specific, more sensitive. So that's why we use it. And it's something you should discuss with your healthcare professional if you haven't already. If you have any questions on healthcare or COVID-19 or the vaccines, give us a call, 896-KLVI, 1-800-330-KLVI. I'll be back in 2 minutes.
You're listening to Dr. Levine's Medical Hour on News Talk 560 KLVI. To join the conversation, call 896-KLVI or 800-330-KLVI.
All right, welcome back to the Dr. Levine Medical Hour. Phone lines are open, 896-KLVI, 1-800-330-KLVI. Talking about screening examinations that were sort of put on hold in 2020 just because of the pandemic, and now a lot of people are sort of behind with their cancer screenings. And we just mentioned mammogram, which most people are familiar with. We also then went on to colon cancer screening, which the big thing with that is it's now more convenient with these stool kits that can be delivered to your home, and you can do that in the convenience of your own home at your own time. Whereas with colonoscopies, it's a lot more inconvenient, but it's still a good test to do. And again, you can't have any history of colon cancer, any sort of active GI problem. You still have to go the traditional route with the colonoscopies. Prostate cancer screening, certainly very popular and very recognizable. Same thing with mammogram, especially here locally with the Dauphine Center and just awareness of cancer screening. They've done a lot of public health community awareness drives and free screenings, not necessarily with mammograms, but with PSA screening, which is basically a simple blood test. When I was coming through medical training, we did do what we call a rectal exam, or a DRE, digital rectal examination, that very uncomfortable examination that guys don't look forward to. It's almost like getting older. You had to go through these now more painful experiences with your health, and it's not something that people look forward to. But the rectal exam is just one of those sort of uncomfortable tests that they teach us. We did that primarily to help screen for prostate cancer. Not one of my favorites, and honestly, it's not one of the things that I recommend. And just probably within the past year, there was one of the societies that came down and said that they no longer recommended that rectal examination for prostate cancer screening, which is something that I agreed with. However, there are some practitioners out there that don't agree and that still perform the rectal exam and still recommend it. That's certainly their preference. But for most people, they just get a blood test. It's called a PSA, or a prostate-specific antigen, and just sort of a little blood marker that can be drawn at your routine healthcare visit, normally once a year. And normally for African Americans, we start at the age of 40, and for everyone else, we start at the age of 50. However, if you have a strong family history, we might start a little sooner. Normally we start 5 to 10 years before your first degree relative got diagnosed with the cancer. And again, in terms of increased risk or increased chance of getting cancer, we only think about that if, again, first degree relative was diagnosed at an earlier age than what is expected. So kind of what that means is if your father was diagnosed with colon cancer in his 30s, that's very early, versus if he was diagnosed in his 50s, that's sort of average risk. Same thing with breast cancer. The average risk starts to sort of go up as one gets older. So if your mother was diagnosed at the age of in her 50s, that sort of general general risk versus if she was in her 30s, then that's higher risk. And so we normally start 5 to 10 years prior to that date. So that's sort of how we look at that, as well as screening for certain cancers. But prostate is one of those that has gotten simpler as well. And I think a lot of guys were putting that off as well because they didn't sort of want the exam, so they didn't mention it. They didn't go in. And we're just kind of kicking the can down the street, so to speak, in terms of getting screening. So now, just with these simple blood tests, you can go ahead and get screened for prostate cancer. And again, get in there sooner rather than later. The options for prostate cancer have grown over the years, to be honest with you. And it's gotten, again, much more complicated, such that, you know, it's difficult for even me to keep up with that. That's something that I sort of just let the urologists or the cancer doctors sort of figure that out. And even talking with oncologists, you know, the cancer world is, there's just so much research going on in cancer right now with a lot of the cancers, that there's new medicines coming out all the time. There's new protocols coming out of time. And in terms of who gets screened and when and where, that, again, with a lot of the cancers, it's getting a lot more complicated, just because we're getting more and more information and a bigger understanding of what to do and for who. And even the cancer treatments are becoming more and more individualized. If you talk with oncologists, it used to be sort of a broad blanket sort of treatment plan for patients. You know, you get diagnosed with cancer, they sort of stage it, and this is sort of what they're going to do for you based on the information. But now it's getting more personalized, where they're using genetic information, your own genetic information, and the information they have about, depending on your genetic markers, your cancer or that cancer seems to do better with this sort of treatment. So that's the future of treatment of cancer, just very highly personalized, again, based on your information, your genetic information. They can fine-tune the cancer treatment, give you medicines that the research indicates has a higher chance of working, has a higher chance of not causing side effects. And that's the way most healthcare is going, especially with more genetic information. As we get that, process it, and figure out what to do with it, I think we'll get closer to that. Even on my end, with just prescribing certain routine medications, you know, for blood pressure and high cholesterol, things like this, we'll sort of get a better idea, a deeper idea of who should react to these meds or that meds. And, you know, we have seen some of that information come across the desk several years ago, where they had companies that would sort of do this genetic testing on you and then run this panel of meds to sort of help us decide you should not have a problem with these meds, but these meds you might have a problem with. We have seen that and have used that sort of information briefly. And there were a lot of limitations with that, primarily just what is your insurance going to pay for, you know, that sort of thing. Or if you like the medicine, you're happy with it, even though this panel says you shouldn't be responding to it, or maybe the practitioner that you're working with liked a particular medicine, they wanted to use it, and you were responding to it. So there were a lot of limitations with the medication when using those panels, but that is the wave, is to try and use this information to help out. Hello, Ronnie. Good morning. Oh, okay. Ronnie, yeah, they're doing a question for that, but that's going to be the future, and it's going to be very exciting to use that information. Hey, Ronnie, what's up? Ronnie, you're live.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. How are you doing this morning?
Okay, great. Got a question about thyroid cancer. I just found out.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
My granddaughter has, I guess, a nodule on her thyroid.
Okay.
And it's calcified. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. What we've got an appointment with the MD later on in actually early next year, which is coming up. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, anytime someone has a nodule on the thyroid, there is always concern that it is cancerous or malignant, and so the thyroid doctors typically go through a process of trying to determine if it's benign or malignant. And really the only way to determine that is a biopsy of the nodule.
Well, and they did take a needle biopsy, and it was cancerous.
Okay, right. And so there are some features of the thyroid nodule prior to the biopsy that suggest cancer or non-cancerous. But these are just suggestions. The ultimate way is just to biopsy it, and that gives you the sort of thyroid cancer it is. And then depending on, again, the type of thyroid cancer and sort of the staging that they put patients through will determine what sort of treatment they get. And most thyroid cancers are treatable, and patients have a really good outcome. And so, you know, that's sort of been my experience with thyroid cancer.
Okay. What about after they remove it, okay, then is there a treatment process afterwards, like a maintenance, or is it just get it out of there and that's it?
Yeah, for most thyroid cancers, they're contained within the thyroid. They're not what they call metastatic. They haven't spread anywhere. So basically, they just sort of remove that part of the thyroid that's cancerous and typically don't have to undergo any other treatment, such as radiation or chemotherapy. And they can sort of be put in a surveillance program where they get sort of annual or routine x-rays, blood tests, physical examination to make sure it hasn't reoccurred anywhere else. And as I, you know, after a certain period of time, five years for thyroid cancer, nothing's happened and they sort of are considered cured and then they sort of go on with their life and the chances of it coming back are pretty low.
Okay.
Now, you know,
Excuse me, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say for, like, again, most patients who get diagnosed with thyroid cancer, the prognosis is really good. And, again, most of the time they can just remove it and be done with it.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see what MD has to say when we get there.
Yeah, call us back. Let us know how things turned out, okay?
Okay. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Have a good day. And we're going to our second break. Phone lines are open, 896-KLVI, 1-800-330-KLVI. I'll be back in 2 minutes.
You're listening to Dr. Levine's Medical Hour on News Talk 560 KLVI. To join the conversation, call 896-KLVI or 800-330-KLVI.
All right, welcome back to the Dr. Levine Medical Hour. Phone lines are open, 896-KLVI or 1-800-330-KLVI. Talking about colon cancer screenings, prostate cancer screenings, which again sort of took a back seat during the pandemic as people just trying to figure out sort of what to do with that. So we're trying to encourage people to get back on their routine with their screenings. You know, in reference to the previous caller about thyroid cancer, we really don't screen for thyroid cancer. We don't screen for all cancers, which, there is disagreement about that. We hear about the dreaded pancreatic cancer a lot. We don't really screen for pancreatic cancer. And so a lot of patients sort of get caught off guard when they do eventually get diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. That's normally something that's diagnosed at a later stage just because of sort of where it is in the human body. And there's just, you know, a lot of space there in the abdominal cavity where it's sitting that it's got to get pretty big before it's noticeable. Even on physical examination, you can't really feel a prostate cancer. And even on laboratory work, you can have a prostate cancer sitting in your pancreas. I'm sorry, you have pancreatic cancer sitting in your pancreas, and your lab can be completely normal. So that's the issue with screening for all cancers. We don't have easy ways to do that. And that's really what it, if you do have a screening program, it's got to be sort of easy. It's got to be affordable. It's got to be convenient. You know, otherwise it's going to be difficult to do. So, you know, the cancer world is the screening cancer world who looks at all this stuff every year and makes recommendations, you know, constantly looking at this and fine-tuning its ability to, you know, reach as many people as possible and get as many cancers screened for as possible. But, you know, thyroid cancer is not one of those that we screen for, but most people sort of diagnose those sooner rather than later because it's sort of sitting on the neck. It's sort of in your face. And, you know, it's more easily recognizable than, let's say, in your abdominal cavity where, you know, you can't see it, you can't feel it. And so, you know, that's sort of a problem. But thyroid cancer normally is easier recognized earlier in its course just because of where it's sitting. We did have a camera-shy caller, says they have a low temperature of around 95 and wants to know how to raise it, always cold. We get a lot of those questions about low temperature, primarily in elderly patients. I don't get it too much in younger people, but I get that a lot in elderly patients. And that is a lot of times for various reasons. I think more immediately, how do you get the temperature up? Basically, you just kind of have to dress warmer. That means, you know, putting on heavy clothing, sweaters, gloves, things like that. I do have some patients that come to the office and they are wearing gloves, even though it's summertime. They have gloves on their hands. And that's why a lot of times if you do have any elderly parents or elderly family and you go into their room, it's warm. You know, the thermostat is at 85 or 86 and they're extremely comfortable, whereas you're burning up. And, you know, it has a lot to do with just how temperature is regulated. As we get older, our ability to regulate our temperatures does start to decline. As with everything else, as we get older, things just kind of start becoming a little bit more chaotic. And temperature regulation, our thermostat in our brain and our nervous system will start to go a little bit haywire and will start to generate some of these abnormalities like the low temperature. And overall, it's not really anything to be too concerned about, especially if you don't feel abnormal. You know, just like with blood pressure, we sort of have a normal range, and then we have kind of a below normal and something above what is normal and where it falls outside of the normal range. But a lot of times, again, it doesn't really amount to a whole lot. Like your temperature, if it's less than 97, that's sort of the lower limits of normal, 97, 96. It's 95. It's almost 97, I guess, is how we would look at that. But if you're not having any symptoms, I wouldn't be too concerned about it. But that's sort of how you warm yourself up in the hospital. We basically do the same thing. We have what we call a warming blanket, or what they call a bear hugger, where it looks like it's a blanket basically, and they just pump heat into the blanket. They put it over you, and through your skin and the blood, the circulation in your skin, the temperature sort of gets inside your bloodstream and raises your body temperature. They call it a bear hugger. So basically, dress warmer. I mean, most people don't have bear huggers at their house. Drinking warm liquids can do that as well, coffee, tea. Sometimes we will put in warmed fluids in the IV if someone has severe hypothermia. That's the medical term for low temperature, hypothermia. And I mean, yes, getting down to a certain temperature, yes, can start to cause some physiological derangements. So I don't want to make light of the situation, you know, especially if someone was left outside in the cold weather. We hear about frostbite. We hear about sort of these thermal injuries when it gets wintertime. Homeless people or people that don't have shelter, they're outside and they get exposed to a prolonged period of low temperature, and their core body temperature, C-O-R-E, body temperature starts to fall, and the body has to work at a certain temperature, which is why we check temperature. But the body can't tolerate a wide range of temperatures before it starts to cause metabolic derangements. So it would have to be a very low temperature at a sustained rate, right, before you start to overwhelm the fail-safe systems that the body already has in place in order to protect itself, and that's when you start to see injury. But for most people, we check out temperature. It's 95. It's really not anything to worry about, especially if we don't have any symptoms. And the easiest thing is just to dress warmer, turn the temperature up in your environment, wherever that is, just like most patients do. They compensate for that, and, you know, drinking warm liquids in order to get your temperature up. The causes of that, like I said, other than unfortunately, our thermostat getting a little bit more haywire as we get older. Certainly, thyroid diseases come into play. So, you know, obviously get your thyroid checked, medication side effects. Now that you're getting medicines from the pharmacy and they are providing you with this whole list of possible side effects to medicines, affecting your temperature is going to be one of those. So the more medicines that you're on, the higher chance of that happening. So that's always going to be a potential side effect to that. Sometimes brain tumors can do that, or any sort of neurological insult. If you've had a stroke, if you have a brain tumor, you're getting sort of chemotherapy that can affect your thermostat and your central nervous system. Those are some potential causes. But in my experience, it's really just the aging process. This is where I really see it the most, when the temperature goes down. We've talked about the possibility or the concept of sepsis, which is a medical term we use for severe infection. A lot of times when patients are severely infected, it can again drop the temperature versus go up. I think we're accustomed to high temperatures when someone has infection, but it can do the opposite as well. The temperature can fall. So that's not good either. But again, the basic maneuvers that we do to get it up, just sort of rewarming sort of maneuvers that we do. Again, most people don't have a bear hugger. It requires a big sort of a big device that sits by your bed, and it looks like plastic tubing that's connected to the machine that you plug into the blanket. So it's sort of this big contraption, but it works very well. And for high temperatures, we have something similar. It's called a cooling blanket, and it's a similar concept. Again, works extremely well. Instead of warm air, it's cold water that we can sort of dial up and adjust the temperature of the water, and we sort of put this blanket that has water going through it on the patient. So if you've ever had heated floors, it's sort of that same concept, but just in this huge plastic wrap, and you just put it on the patient. Works very well. Anyway, we'll go in our last break. Phone lines are open, 896-KLVI, 1-800-330-KLVI. I'll be back in 2 minutes. All right, welcome back. Phone lines are open. Last segment of the show, a little time left in the show. I was just highlighting our cancer screening surveillance programs that we have. Just encouraging you to get back on track with that. The year 2020 was sort of a lost year, and a lot of people are behind with their cancer screenings, and obviously will generate some negative impact on that, as a year can make a huge difference. And a lot of times with cancers, as cancer is alive, it's growing, it's getting bigger, and certainly can spread to a different site. Clady, what's up?
Well, I just wanted to tell you what my wife experienced after having her shot yesterday at 4 o'clock, and about 7 o'clock in the evening, or maybe 8 o'clock, she got weak and couldn't get out of her chair, and I had to help her out of her chair and got her back to bed. Then later on, she got up and went to the bathroom and couldn't get off the commode, and I had to get my neighbor come over and help me get her up and get her back in bed. Then I realized that that she had later on that evening, she had a fever of 100.7 and a headache, or a mild headache. And so this morning, she's able to get out of bed and with assistance walk to the, you know, bathroom and things like that. But, and her strength is coming back. But I just wanted you to know that's one, and I'm fairly comfortable. Everything was caused by that, that vaccine. You know, it was her, the Moderna, the second shot. But, hopefully her strength and all is coming back and everything. I just wanted to know that's one side effect that, that she's had the three, you know, either the where you get extremely weak or tired.
Yes.
And it's 99 even right now.
Well, yeah, hopefully, and thank you for that information. Hopefully she does get better, which most people do. And, yeah, the discussion of side effects with the vaccines has been discussed at length, and I don't think anyone is trying to hide the fact that some people will have some mild side effects that go away within a few days. Obviously, some people can have more severe side effects, so that is unfortunate. But most people, if you look at the data and the information out there, indicate that most people have minimal to no side effects. So I'm sorry that your wife is experiencing that. And we hope that this is a very short period of time and that she will have a full recovery and get better. You can use things like Tylenol and anti-inflammatories, Motrin, Advil to sort of help with those symptoms, and certainly talk with your healthcare professional if things don't get better. Hello? Okay. Yeah, so thank you for getting that vaccine. And yes, we have talked about the vaccine side effect issue, but most people don't have any side effects, so we still recommend that. Anyway, have a happy Thanksgiving. Eat a lot and have fun. Don't drink and drive. And we'll see you next Saturday. Take care.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.